You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. How's it going, guys? Did you have a good week?
Going good here. Very, very busy week.
Going good.
Fantastic. There's a couple of phrases I got to use last night that I never use. First, I can't wait to get back to Georgia where it's cooler. I normally never get to say that. And once I got home last night, we went out to eat pretty much straight from the airport. My wife said, it's 50 degrees and you're wearing shorts like a crazy person. I said, well, hey, man, I just came in from California.
That sounds like a good excuse to me.
You got to be that guy.
Exactly. All right, let's jump into things for episode 11 now that we're in the we're squarely in the double digits. Pretty big week. I guess the reviews on the Google Pixel are out. What do you guys make of it?
I'm sorry to say it's just another Android phone. I mean, it's slick and all, but there's nothing about it that makes me want to switch from my iPhone.
All the reviews look great. Everything I've seen, everybody loves it. And everybody said it looks exactly like an iPhone. It feels almost exactly like an iPhone as far as the feel of it. And, you know, they all love it. Well, of course they do, because iPhones are amazing. Google copied, you know, the formula there. It works. If you're anti-iPhone or anti-Apple or whatever anti you are and you have to have another phone, then it sounds like a good one. I still don't think they'll sell a whole lot of them. It's just another phone out there that
sort of like the Nexus.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a great phone, and there are going to be people who are hardcore that want nice stuff but don't want Apple stuff. It'll buy it, but that's a very small sliver of the pie.
So there's a few things that they were bragging about, you know, when they announced it a few weeks ago. There's no camera bump like the iPhone has, and they were all proud of that. Well, the reason for that is that the phone is slightly wedge-shaped. So it's thicker at the top than it is the bottom. So that's how they hide the camera bump. It is kind of funny that all of the things that Apple gets beat up on, Google gets a pass on, right? This phone is not water-resistant. You can still see, it still has visible antenna lines. It's pretty much an iPhone 6 in design. A month ago, Apple gets beat up because they release a phone. Oh, this is too similar to the 6 and the 6 Plus. Not enough change. Google releases one it's even more like the 6 than the 7 is. And, oh yeah, this is great. This is wonderful. It's the next big thing. What I have heard, though, is that the camera is actually very, very nice. Even edges out the iPhone 7 camera slightly, it says. And what was the other thing that was kind of cool? Of course, the assistant. But I don't know if you guys have noticed, and we'll put some links in the show notes. The assistant, while still kind of sharp, still isn't where it needs to be. So the natural language processing and the other things that are a part of that, where it's supposed to identify things, it's still better than Siri, but it's still not that great. Have you guys read anything on the performance of the assistant?
My friend Ryan has he did have an Android. He just bought an iPhone 7 this week. I forget what the trigger word is for it, but he would say Google or Hey Google or whatever, and it always seemed to work pretty good. Now, granted, this wasn't on a Pixel, but you know, I would assume that it would be using the same back-end technology.
So the tests that I saw, people were doing this, and it's not the same technology.
Fair enough.
The assistant is actually using something slightly different. So they were doing tests where they would do the OK search engine. I won't say it, so I won't trigger anybody if we do have anybody listening on one of those. But they would say OK search engine, and they would do their little query. And a lot of those would come back more accurate than the assistant. There's something different on the back end in the way that they're doing it. However, you could ask that the actual assistant to do things like, I think Mike Hurley had tweeted out that he had done something like, how do you say something in Romanian? And it would give the translation just fine. Whereas he would do it in something like...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And he'd do it something in like that in Siri, and it would just, you know, punt to a web result. So I think we would all agree that we know which one's the weakest, but... Still, the assistant looks like the nicest feature. I'm also reading that the lag doesn't exist in the UI on the Pixel at all, and it's they're saying that it's, I think, The Verge
finally
yeah, it's taken years. The Verge had said it was probably it even blew away the S7 in terms of performance. So
I read a couple of things as far as like the camera. They said it is really good, but one of the things is the iPhone camera is more of a true real color camera, like what you see is what you get, whereas the camera on this phone tries to make some optimizations to make you a better photographer without really letting you control control those optimizations. And, you know, that was one of the things I saw, that it, you know, that, yeah, it was really good. But if, you know, if you wanted to take your picture exactly like what you see, then the iPhone was more of a true colors on the phones. And it doesn't surprise me about the assistant that Google would be better. I mean, as far as, I mean, they've got the experience there with people asking them questions all the time.
So the Pixel is a good phone for casuals.
For the muggles.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, if you're anti-iPhone and you like nice stuff, this is probably the phone to get. But that's not a lot of people. I don't see them selling a lot of these things.
The support aspect is still the thing that will be their undoing, I think. I think that is the limiting factor of this. No matter how well-designed something is, you're going to have problems with it. And dealing with carriers, dealing with Best Buy, dealing with normal retailers, unless you have a dedicated channel set up, it's going to be difficult to do. And that's you need to have your own retail presence to really make that customer experience pop. I don't know, unless you just walk in and you're able to swap it every single time. But we've seen the quality that works at carriers. We've seen the quality that works in normal retail stores. And it's just not that great. They have to support everything, not just one product. So they're not really experts in it. You take your phone to the Apple store. That's all they work on is Apple's products. I must say that I am kind of tempted. It's like, you know, I really would like to pick up a 32 gig just to see what it's like. But, you know, I'm not going to. There's plenty of other things I'd rather buy instead. So, but part of me does want
to
get one.
What would you do? Like switch your SIM back and forth, or just to use it for a few hours?
I would probably get a SIM on something like T-Mobile or something like that and just slap in there and do for like a month or two to see. You know, I wouldn't need something where I had a ton of data. I wouldn't need something where I had a ton of minutes or anything like that. I could pick a cheap plan or a prepaid plan on any carrier and just to give it a shot, just to see what it was like. But since I wouldn't use it on a daily basis and I wouldn't use it enough regularly to do it, I just can't really justify it. But part of me does want to play with it just to see what it's like.
So since they're only selling at Verizon, you could still use it on T-Mobile, just to use your example?
Yeah, they're not carrier locked. So, you know, the good question there is if they're like an iPhone in the sense that prior to the iPhone 7, from like the 5S through the entire 6 series, the radios and the iPhones were dual CDMA GSM. So if you had a Verizon iPhone, you could take it to AT&T or T-Mobile and use it just fine. Theoretically, you could have used it on Sprint, but Sprint doesn't allow you to bring your own devices. I'll have to do a little research and see if the Pixel is the same way. I would be very surprised if they did something where they had to make various models like that. If you're going to ape the iPhone, ape the best feature of the iPhone, which was the carrier independence. Of course, the 7's not like that because Intel is making half the radios for the GSM and Qualcomm is making the radios for the CDMA, which are also dual GSM. And that's a good segue into the other story that came out this week. I think MacRumors had a link saying that the phones that had the Qualcomm chips had better throughput on their respective cellular carriers than the GSM models. So you remember a couple of years ago when there was a chip inside, I think it was the iPhone 6, where if you had
it was the 6S.
Was that it? So if you had the Samsung or the TSMC, one outperformed the other and you could do a little test or put on this app to show you which one you had. Well, this is the same thing. A lot of people are debunking it, saying, oh, that's not real world. It doesn't matter. And it's the same. But I like to believe that I have the better iPhone. So I don't know about you, Jim.
If you tell me I have the better iPhone, I'll believe you.
So let's see. So the big news this week was Nintendo announced a new console, the Switch. So it's a console tablet hybrid. Brad, what did you make of this? You're a regular Nintendo-er.
I think it's pretty slick. The trailer or release video for it, or whatever you want to call it, was really cool. I don't see myself going to being invited to a rooftop party and then I bring over my Switch and everybody jumps on board. But the tech looks pretty cool. I would like to see, you know, I'd like to really put my hands on it because I really like my Wii and I always like I always liked the Nintendo. It was just one of those kind of trendsetters. They were kind of the first at most of the really fun things.
The one thing that made me laugh in the video was seeing the guy on the plane who's sitting there with like the little controllers in his hand with the seat back, his tablet on the seat back, just really getting into playing a video game. And I say that as...
And the tablet is 4 inches away from from his hands.
Yeah, that was the other thing that was kind of weird. I say this as someone who both on both segments of my flight this week had the 12.9-inch iPad on the seat back, sitting there with like the big headphones on, completely immersed, ignoring everything around me and just catching up on TV shows and movies. And even I thought that that looked geeky with the guy sitting there doing his little hands and just really getting into it. If I was sitting on a flight and somebody was doing that next to me, I would just have this look of disgust. It's just this.
What are you, four?
Yeah, it's like... Could you not do this for at least 2 hours of your life? But I don't know. It just seemed kind of weird to me. Jim, what did you make of it?
It's just Nintendo being Nintendo. They're trying to take on too many angles here. The tablet won't be as good as an iPad or maybe even a nice Android tablet. The gameplay, I mean, it's going to be good on there, but you've got to get them in people's hands. And if kids already have iPads that have tons of games on it and the games are super cheap, I don't know. I just don't see them selling a whole lot of these for kids. It's going to be something like
for millennials,
like a Brad buys or yeah, you know, just it's not a, I don't think it's a kid device. I mean, maybe it's not supposed to be, but just seems to me like that's how you sell quantities of these things.
Well, everybody they showed in the release video looked like a millennial or older, and maybe they're banking on those kids like myself or you two guys that sort of grew up in the 80s.
I want that classic system that they're going to release, the little mini classic system with like the, what was it, 20, 25 games or whatever on it?
It was 30 games. I have already put myself on the please tell me when this goes on release, because I will be buying it the day of. That will be one of those 3 a.m. wakers for me.
On that list as well. So, you know, I can't wait to have a little Tecmo Bowl player plugged into the TV.
I'm not yet, but I guess I need to get on that, because that seems like a no-brainer for me as well. The one thing that I thought about this device, the Switch, there's a couple of things that are kind of weird to me. I think the reliance on being able to play games in person with someone is sort of a limiting factor. I think back to when I was a kid and used to have to do the head-to-head with Game Boys via the little cable, and I can remember sitting in study hall doing that years and years ago, playing a football game on the Game Boy, and it seems like if that's still a requirement, and it looks like that it is, that not the cable, obviously, but being physically near someone to play, Nintendo has never really embraced truly the over-the-internet style of play, not in the same way that the PlayStation Network or Xbox Live works. And I think that's because, you know, there's a lot of cruft that goes along with that. You play against people on things like Xbox Live and PlayStation Network, and you get a lot of foul-mouthed little hoodlums that are that sort of make it a questionable experience. Nintendo being very family-friendly really wants you to only play with people you know, it seems like. That's at least the feeling I get from this. So if that is a requirement and you still don't have some sort of network that you can connect to random people and play, I think that's a limiting factor. And if you're making a tablet, which is really what this is, you're really need to make it so that you're competing with an iPad or a Android tablet or a Amazon tablet, right? It needs to be a good tablet in addition to being a good game playing device to really make it a compelling thing. And it's not, right? It's a game playing device. So I see it as a very niche market.
It's not a touchscreen, is it?
I don't think that it is.
So it's no more than just a really small TV.
That seems like a huge fail.
You would have to think, though, wow, that would be so stupid for them to release that and have it work in only that way, right? That would be... It just seems like they're still stuck in like it's 2005 or something instead of 2016. I don't understand why they would do that.
Well, you were talking about the online gameplay part, and one of the things I was questioning is why hasn't Nintendo latched on to being able to purchase a game, you know, and it's locked into DRM like Microsoft or Sony. And then I guess I'm just wondering why they haven't gotten away from cartridges yet, because this is still a cartridge system.
Is it? Oh, geez. That is...
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to 2016, Nintendo. I mean, come on. That's ridiculous.
Might as well mark this one DOA then, because that's going to be a limiting thing. You know, the funny thing about that is whenever my nieces come to visit in the summer and they leave, I'll be cleaning out our Trailblazer after all is said and done, and I'll raise the seat up, and there's styluses from their game playing devices. There's games that have fallen in between the seats.
And Cheetos.
And I immediately think, why isn't all this stuff and Cheetos. And I really think, why isn't all of this digital? Who is still doing this? This is, wow, that's, you almost have to admire that steadfast, stubborn, we're going to keep this decidedly retro attitude that they have instead of just embracing a completely digital model.
Well, it's just kind of crazy because they're, you know, the kid says, Mom, I want new game. And they're going to have to go to Target or something and buy the new game instead of just getting on some sort of app store and get your parents' permission and clicking OK and buying the game, you know, while you're at home. It is crazy. I mean, you know, Jim was talking about using an iPad as a gaming device for your kid and then buying a game that may be, you know, $3-4 and it's a good babysitter. But why? It just doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, you could easily make downloadable games for the Switch in the same pay model, in the same, you know, pay tiers, and be just as successful.
Yeah, I would tend to think so as well. It just doesn't make any sense. You're adding friction to the purchasing process when it should be frictionless. I buy things. If you make it so that I can click a button and it's immediately available,
it's bought.
Exactly. It's done. Comixology, before they went stupid and removed the in-app purchase when Amazon bought them, I can't tell you. Actually, I probably could tell you if you gave me enough time to dig through my email and put together a spreadsheet. However, I have probably spent a couple $100 in about 6 months on comics that I would have never done if I actually had to stop and think about it. Even if I could press a button, order it from Amazon, and have it through Prime 2 days later, I wouldn't have done it. But
get in the car and go to the comic book store.
Right, but because I'm sitting there reading and it's like, well, crap, I want to know what happens next. Click the button and, you know, now you know.
You know, I mean, my nephews play their iPads constantly. You know, they love these games that they play, like Goat Simulator. And I mean, I was like, what the? It's Goat Simulator. And they love this game that, you know, they all three play it, but one will sit there and play and the other two will sit around and watch them and they'll be like, I got to do this or I got to do that. And I mean, they play those constantly, and my brother uses that iPad as power over them. I mean, they do what they need to do. They clean up. They get dressed for school. I mean, that iPad is like, it's like God. I mean, if you lose access to your iPad, then it's a crappy day when you're a 12-year-old. To me, that's what makes it a must-have purchase for a kid, and I don't see any of that here. And then throw in the cartridges. Like, I mean,
you're right.
What the minimum price of a cartridge, it couldn't even be $5. It would have to be at least $10. And they're probably going to be $20 or more, which just, no, I don't see that even barely launching.
It would have to be $20 because you got to consider distribution and the overhead of going to a brick and mortar store and the cost of packaging and the cost of putting it on a little plastic card with a little PCB inside of that plastic card.
Yeah, that ship's not even going to launch. I don't know. I mean, let's see them just like with the Google Pixel that we just talked about. Let's see if they release sales numbers on this or that one and see how high either one of them get. But I bet Apple makes more iPhones in a day.
What this reminds me of is a few years back, you had artists like Kid Rock and Garth Brooks and AC/DC that wouldn't put their music on any, not only streaming services, but even for sale on things like iTunes, right? They would be like, hey, we have a new CD and it's launching exclusively at Walmart or Target or whatever. And I would think, why are you doing that? Like, who are you trying to get to buy this? And then in the case of those artists,
the olds.
There you go. That's exactly what I was about to say. People who are old and accustomed to that. So maybe that's what Nintendo is banking on, is that people who are going to go and buy this, they have to be shooting for people our age who might go and do this. I still think that it's a silly model. And you know, by releasing Super Mario Run on iOS later this year, they could just be hedging their bets. They could be going, okay, we're going to release our own thing with its exclusives, and we're going to release this as an exclusive. And if one outsells the other, maybe that's how they're going to set their strategy. I can't imagine that Super Mario Run isn't going to make a lot more money for them than the other, simply because more people have iPhones, more people have iPads. People are going to buy this just off the, and there's no friction to the purchase. No matter, they can charge $20 or $30. You're going to hit that button, you're going to hit buy, and you'll have it immediately. Why would you not?
But you already have iPhones and iPads in people's hands too.
All about reducing that friction.
A friend earlier this week went to a launch party for a local artist. And I saw her a night or two later, and she gave me a CD that she got at the launch party, like a, you know, a free CD that they were giving out. And
it's a drink coaster.
I realized after she gave it to me, it's sitting here on my desk. I don't have anything in my whole apartment that'll play this thing, because I had an Xbox. I had that Xbox One that I gave to my nephews. And before that, I had my Blu-ray. player that I guess would play it. But when I got the Xbox, I gave the Blu-ray player to a friend. So I don't have anything right now. I didn't even think about it when I gave the nephews the Xbox. I don't actually have a Blu-ray player right now either. I have nothing in my house that will play an optical disc.
Uh-oh, that's pretty funny.
As much crap as I have here, as much technical stuff as I have all over this apartment, I don't have anything that would even play a disc.
Well, you can either mail it to me for a dollar, or you can go buy yourself a USB CD player for $10.
An Amazon Basics DVD, external DVD. You have to actually probably get in your car, because I'll bet your car still has a CD player, does it not?
You know, I bet it does. I didn't even think about that. The car will rip it to the internal hard drive in the car, too, but then I can't get it back out to get it back onto my laptop.
That is kind of funny and crazy when you think about it. I mean, again, similarly, I do have Blu-ray players and game players and whatnot, so I guess I could do that. Oh, and as an aside, on Xbox Live a few months ago, Goat Simulator was free. So I saw it, and it's like, okay, it's free. I got to do this. So I did it. I was running around playing as a little goat, licking things and knocking things over and jumping around. Actually, I can see the appeal. It got boring to me after like 5 minutes, but it was still kind of a cute concept, I guess.
They go nuts over that game. I thought it was hilarious. I 5 minutes with me and I'd be like, somebody like kick me in the head, but 12-year-olds, man, they love that.
All right, so we were talking about digital assistants and I got mine. Alexa, say hello.
Hello.
It worked.
I know, right? So again, didn't get in until late last night, so I didn't have a chance to set it up until early this morning, but I did get it set up. I did get Spotify integrated with it. I did get If This Then That integrated and my thermostats integrated, so I did have some time to poke around. I also got my Fire Stick and got that set up as well. The cool thing is the Alexa app can also control the Fire Stick. There are some things that it can do. So I was able to set my default music library for Spotify in both the Fire Stick and the Echo Dot, which is kind of nice. I did try playing with the thermostat integration through If This Then That, and that's gonna take some doing until I'm satisfied with it. So what I discovered, being that it's now cold in Georgia, if I tell it to, I'll flip my thermostat from cool to hot, depending on, you know, it starts out cool here in the morning, and then it gets warmer throughout the course of the day. So I may have it on warm in the morning on heat, and then put it in cool in the afternoon. I noticed I had it on cool because I sleep cool, and I wanted to flip it to hot. So I told it to change the temperature, to 73 and do it with heat. Well, it didn't flip the heat switch. So it set the temperature still with a cool setting. So that's, again, most first world of first world problems, but I'll figure that integration out. There's something going on that I'm not quite getting, I'm sure.
Is there a code word you didn't use or something that didn't switch the mode?
No, according to the recipe in If This Then That, it said cool or heat as to which one you're supposed to do. And I made I have different triggers for the cool and different for the heat. So there must be something that I'm missing on that. There's got to be some silly thing. It was one of those where it was like I spent 5 minutes before we started recording just to see if it would work. It would change the temp. It just wouldn't flip from one to the other. So I guess if I have it on heat or have it on cool and do it, it'll be fine. But I'm sure it's just something silly that I haven't figured out yet.
When are we going to have house thermostats, and maybe they already exist, where you can just say, keep my house between 68 and 71, turn it on hot, turn it on cold, just keep it this temperature instead of hot, you know, this range, you know, cold, this range. Just keep it comfortable, like you do your car. My car will do that. I can tip my car to 70 degrees, and if I get in it in December, it turns on the heat. If I get it in any other month of the year in Dallas, it turns off the air conditioner. So it's and on that. Why don't house thermostats do that? Is it to keep from cutting on different units on and off and on and off? I really don't know. Maybe
That's a great question. I've often wondered that myself because, again, here, we fluctuate wildly between day and night. You know, in the nighttime, it gets really cool. And during the day, it gets not hot, I guess, necessarily this time of year, but we'll have days. Right now, it'll probably be 66 is the high today, right? But in a week or two, it could get up into the late 70s or whatever. You never know with Georgia. So I really wish it would do the same thing. But again, I have three units. One, I keep cool all the time in the basement. So year round, I just have that one set. And sometimes it gets really frosty down here, but I like it that way. But yeah, it's, I guess you could have the units competing with each other. I think if you have systems that do the zone heating, heating and cooling, that it'll actually do that. But those thermostats are a lot more expensive. I may be totally off on that, as I'm usually just, please keep it cool, no matter what. If I were a single dude living here by myself, it wouldn't be an issue because I hardly ever run the heat.
Yep, that's me right here. I keep it cool most of the time. I mean, today in Dallas, our low this morning was 50 degrees, which is crazy in Dallas. But our high is 81. So, I mean, that's a 30-point swing in one day. And as late as Wednesday of this week, it was 90 degrees here, or, you know, a couple of degrees over 90. So right now, I mostly just keep my thermostat turned completely off, and I have windows open, which I've had to close this morning, or it would have been really loud on the podcast, and Brian would have fussed at me. So,
got to have that noise reduction. What about you, Brad?
We usually keep it about 68 pretty much year-round, whether it's the heat or whether it's the cool. We just have one unit. Our house isn't big, but I do have the Honeywell Wi-Fi thermostat set up, and it's hooked to Alexa. I just named it Hallway when I bought it, so it's right there in the between all the bedrooms. So I'll just say set it 2 degrees cooler, or set it 2 degrees warmer, or something like that. I mean, I don't have IFTTT set up. It works reliably every time. I just say, you know, set the hallway to 72, or lower the hallway by 2 degrees, and then you hear the air kick on, and all of a sudden you're cooler.
Are you flipping from heat to cool at all, or are you just keeping it on the same?
I haven't done that yet, mainly because I only got the Echo a couple of months ago, and I haven't had the need to do that yet. I did wake up this morning. It was a little chilly in the house, but it's already, it's just moving my blood around. I've warmed up, so I didn't feel the need to turn the heat on yet. But it's probably about 56 outside right now.
And here I am in this 100-year-old building downtown with a thermostat from probably the 80s when they renovated the building. And my thermostat still, I don't even have numbers on it. I just have like
it's got the brass ring.
Now I have a lever, you know, a little lever on there where, you know, I just move it back and forth, and hopefully I actually have a thermometer sitting on the wall next to the thermostat. So that way I'm like, it's kind of cold in here. And I'll walk in there and the thermostat will say like 68. I'm like, all right. So I'll tick up the lever a little bit or down. But what the lever is on is in no way relation to actually the temperature that it sets it to. It's way off, like by a number of degrees. It's more of just a comfort lever than it is a temperature lever.
That would drive me nuts.
Yeah, I need to know what the actual temperature is. That's just one of those Aspie things, I guess. You know, you remember everything that you see, and you need to know what the temperature is.
It took some getting used to for me, and that's why, I mean, that's how ADD, I mean, or whatever it is for me, that, you know, I've got this thermometer digital readout right there, so I can kind of look at that, and it's like, why am I cold or why am I hot? And I look at that, and then I adjust the thermostat accordingly.
Downtown hipster style.
So what's this about Bill Belichick doesn't like Microsoft tablets? What about that, Jim?
I loved that story. When I saw that, I was like, oh, immediately, we've got to talk about this. Because number one, it's Bill Belichick, who's like just the ultimate grumpy. The
curmudgeon.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best coach in football that we all love to hate. I mean, I hate the Patriots. I hate Bill Belichick. I hate Tom Brady. But this was an hilarious story. There's a video of them literally just like throwing the Microsoft Surface on the sideline. Like, this is a piece of crap. You know, it doesn't do what we need to do. They want to look at pictures that are taken overhead. They want to have plays on it. They want to do all this. And he's like, get off my lawn. I like my pictures and my whiteboards and all this stuff. And the fact that Microsoft paid millions of dollars to get these put on the sideline and to get them into the halftime shows and all this stuff.
Get them in front of some eyes.
Right. And then now we're 7 or so weeks into the season, and Mr. Outspoken Belichick, it's like, this is a piece of crap. I don't know why they're making us use it. You know, I really don't want to use it. It's not a huge story, so I don't think it really hurts Microsoft a lot. But for, you know, somebody like us and fellow geeks, I think it's pretty funny. If you're into both sides of things, if you're a sports person and a technology person like myself, it really is. It's a great story.
You should put the GIF in the show notes, because it shows him, you know, slamming it down against a road case, which is one of those like hard fiber cases that have the metal edges. You know, they're made for throwing into 18-wheelers. It's pretty funny because, you know, he bashed it pretty hard.
I remember right when Microsoft signed that deal, there for a while, the announcers were still saying iPads. They were calling them iPads. I remember that. And Microsoft got really upset about it.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
I think, weren't they in cases or something where you couldn't see what they were originally? And then after a while, they had to show the branding, or Microsoft would get angry about it.
Yeah, everything's an iPad. It's just one of those, you know, that iPad was really the first tablet everybody knew. So it became like the, you Google for something or, you know, you just, whether you're, no matter what search engine you're using. So yeah, it was, they had to retrain the announcers to not say iPad when they first started the deal.
I think that's pretty awesome that Apple has done that, just because we've generically just say tablet, but nobody just says tablet. They say iPad. And I've seen people come in and they've got an Android tablet in their hand, some variation of an Android device. And, well, I've got my iPad here and blah, blah, blah. And can you help me with it? And they hand it to you. And it's definitely not an iPad. It's some Android device or even a Amazon Fire, which I can't say anything bad about. I love my Fire, but all the same.
You know, out in the wild, I think I see more of those Fire tablets than I do all the other Android tablets combined. I mean, you know, obviously I think I see more iPads than those. But as far as other tablets, the Fire ones, I think Amazon has done a real good job of getting those in people's hands, because there's definitely a lot of them out there.
I have two of them sitting behind me next to my printer back there. But yeah, the well, because they're disposable practically, right? If you catch them on just the right time of year, you can get a 7-inch tablet for $40.
Amazon Day or Prime Day.
Yep. And not just that, there's other times where they've done it, but I've jumped on it. And again, when my nieces come to visit, I usually let them play with it. And again, it's like giving a crackhead a crack pipe. I mean, they'll sit there just transfixed for an entire weekend. It's the best. It was best $40 a tablet I ever spent. But yeah, I would agree. When it comes to kids, I see more of the Fire tablets out in the wild. When it comes to adults, I usually see either iPads or Surfaces. Though we were just referring to the iPad as the generic term for tablets. That's an eponym, I believe, is the I had to look that up really quick. When something that is the trademarked word becomes the generic word, like using a Kleenex when you mean a tissue, or Googling when you were searching for something, that type of thing. So it's kind of funny that they got that mindshare, because they were the first on the scene with that. So that's kind of cool.
Or like in the South, everything's a Coke. Like, you'll ask somebody if they want a Coke, and then they say yes, and you say, okay, what kind?
I love seeing that that infographic that pops up every once in a while, where it shows, like, I had a roommate from Chicago in college, and everything was a pop. It's a pop. Do you want a pop? You want a pop? Some people do, I want a soda. My bad.
I say soda, actually, and I'm from the South, so what can you do? Maybe it's because of all the people that say Coke. Louis Grizzard used to make a joke about that, was everybody used to call it a Coke. Do you want a Coke? You know, he was famously, he was a Southern gent. He says, no, I don't want a, you know, do you want a pop? And he's like, no, I don't want a pop. How about I pop you upside the head with this Coke bottle?
Yeah, I used to hate hearing that. And it was never P-O-P. In my mind, it always sounded like P-A-A-A-A-H-H-H-H-P. A pap. Do you want a pap? No, I want four fried chickens and a Coke.
Yeah, there was, I think the New York Times or one of the big papers did a study like that, where they ask you a series of like 20 questions on what you call different things, and then they could almost exactly tell you what part of the country you were from. It was pretty good, very accurate.
Oh yeah, like if you call the road right off of the interstate, the frontage road or the service road, and they can usually pretty pinpoint you pretty accurately, you know, what state you're from. It's pretty awesome. I'm going right off of what you said, Jim.
Anyway, we all love our iPads. That's all I know. And our Coca-Colas. Although I do drink Coke Zero. I could not live without Coke Zero.
That's pretty funny. We're going to have some really interesting links in the show notes this week.
Cherry Zero here. Cherry Zero with a splash of lime juice. It's a key lime juice. It's awesome.
And y'all are even more Southern than me. I thought I was bad with just the Coke Zero. Yeah, Cherry Coke Zero.
I was a big Cherry Zero fan myself back when I still drank carbonated drinks. And Cherry Diet Coke, if you've ever found that, that's an extremely rare thing to find. I used to find it when I was in Northern Virginia, and it's hard to come by. But when I used to drink the carbonated drinks and I would go for diet drinks, I hated the taste of Diet Coke with a passion. So this was before Coke Zero existed. I would hunt down Cherry Diet Coke, and I'd have to buy it in bulk practically, because you couldn't find it. Once you found a store that carried it, that was your go-to store. I was so glad when Coke Zero appeared. But I actually missed, if we get on the topic of carbonated drinks, C2 was actually my favorite back when that was a thing during the whole low-carb craze, where it was half sugar and half aspartame.
Oh, that's cool.
So it kind of tasted like like a watered down Coke a little bit, but it still tasted like, it tasted like a bottled version of a fountain drink version of Coke. If you ever want to, you have some fun, head down the wiki hole and read about C2. It was only briefly short lived and I miss it. Well, I don't miss it because I don't drink carbonated drinks anymore, but if I did, that would be my jam right there.
I love my Coke Zero, and then I go on and off of it. I can't imagine not ever having my Coke Zero.
I tell you, it took me a while to get used to it. I do kind of miss it. I will say about a year ago, I went and tried the Coca-Cola Life and the little tiny bottle. I don't know if you guys have had that. That's close to a C2 where it's like...
Is that real sugar or cane sugar?
Yeah, cane sugar in it, but still not a lot. I don't think it's slightly less sugar than a real Coke. And it was only a small bottle that I allowed myself to have. And I missed the taste, but again, does not agree with me at all.
Here in Dallas, it's like a Dr. Pepper country. Everybody loves Dr. Pepper and I can't stand Dr. Pepper. So.
Well, they make it right there, just right down the street from you. So just, 30, 40 miles south of you.
How do you not like Dr. Pepper?
I like Coke.
Well, I do too. Being in Atlanta, being a Coke country, of course, I'm contractually obligated to say that. But Dr. Pepper is still pretty good too. Even Coke's brand of Mr. Pibb, not bad.
Dr. Pepper goes great with your comic books. That's all I'll say.
Well, all I can remember, there was a place in Texas. I guess they don't do it anymore, but they had the they had a Dr. Pepper thing out there that was...
Dublin Dr. Peppers.
Yeah, Dublin Dr. Pepper.
I used to buy those after I moved to Texas and bring them back to our DBA in Mississippi. Shout out to Harry if you're listening. But I used to buy 6-packs of those and bring them to him when I was going on site for work.
It's amazing to me that the sugar tariffs that we implemented in this country in the early 80s drove out using things with actual cane sugar in them and made it all high fructose corn syrup because it really...
And it's so much better. The real sugar is so much better. It's like getting, the Dublin Dr. Peppers and what they call the Mexican Coke.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, too, how there's an entire underground thing. Whenever you go to any the ethnic food aisle of any grocery store here in the South, I don't know about the rest of the country, but you have the Mexicokes where you have the bottled with pure cane sugar. You'll pay a premium for it. But, man, those are so good.
Yep. Sorry about that rabbit hole we just completed there on Pop.
Pap. It's the best. You know what? We deserve it. So I guess we really only have one more topic to discuss this week. So it looks like, and we don't want to get too political because, politics sucks. I'll be so glad when this election is over. But it looks like that Tim Cook was actually considered as a vice presidential candidate for Hillary Clinton. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's pretty cool. I would have liked him better than Kane. I don't really know much about Kane, but after seeing him on the vice presidential debate, I don't like him. Not that I don't like Pence either. They're both just kind of puppets or tools really, but I could really get behind any candidate that would choose Cook as their VP. I think that's pretty cool.
I think most vice presidents are non-entities anyway. If you look at it historically, there's an old saying that the quickest way to disappear is to be elected vice president or something like that. It was most of the time you get elected vice president, you don't really hear much out of somebody unless it's some weird, odd quote. But I don't think in a million years he would take that job. But I think
it doesn't pay enough.
No, it doesn't pay enough.
That's what I was thinking too. Why would he ever want to take that job? It's like taking a step down. The pay I don't think is really matters. But as far as being able to run Apple, which is if not the biggest, the almost biggest, day-to-day, company in the world with so much influence, to be vice president, especially for Hillary Clinton. I mean, come on. I don't see it happening. I mean, she can all day say that she would love to have either of them, but I don't think either any of them would have ever become vice president. So,
well, like to go off what Brian said, it'd be like going from being a rock star, the biggest, brightest star, and then just becoming,
a high school principal,
a hermit that lives in a cave. As far as the visibility or the visual of the VP, I can say that, not to get overly political still, but you never really saw much of Gore whenever Clinton was in office, or you never saw much of the other VPs whenever someone else is in office. But Joe Biden has been really more visual than I remember other VPs being. And it reminds me of a joke where somebody asks Obama, what's your favorite Wu-Tang album? And Obama goes, what? Like they caught him off guard, and Biden comes in and grabs the mic and he's like, Liquid Swords by the GZA. It just lets you see that people think that Obama and Biden are pretty cool guys.
I will say, if you want to have a good laugh, go hit The Onion and look for the stuff that they've done with Joe Biden. And it's been pretty funny about, the Secret Service shuts down Joe Biden's underground White House tours. And like he had a side business going or something. And there was one where he was a roofer and he had this really cool playlist and he was saving up for a kick-ass Trans Am. I mean, it's The Onion has had a lot of fun with Biden. Jim, you were going to say?
I was just going to say, let's not forget Dick Cheney, everybody. I mean, come on. He ran this country for 8 years and nobody gives him any respect for it. So
shot people in the face. Yeah.
That is true. I forgot about that. But
he was like the Wizard of Oz. He was pretty much running the show and he was behind the curtain most of the time.
Shooting people in the face.
When it comes to VPs, my favorite VP is the fictional VP, Selena Meyer, on the HBO show Veep. One of the best shows on television, man. I love that show.
One of the best shows.
Definitely. I love that show so much. I could sit here and start quoting it, but then you would just have to cut it all to clean it up, Brian.
I know. And it's sad. When that show started, I thought I didn't really have high expectations for it. I was familiar with Armando Iannucci and the movie In the Loop, which I liked. But I just didn't think, what's this going to be like? You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know, maybe I was just being grumpy myself, but my goodness, that show this past season was consistently hilarious every single week. I think I'm going to go back and just binge watch that entire series from the beginning just because.
I just catch myself watching other scripted comedy shows and I think, that's kind of clever. That's kind of funny. But I really catch myself laughing out loud, annoyingly laughing out loud watching Veep.
I think it is the funniest show on TV right now. I mean, it is just so good. I heard an interview with Selena Meyer with Julia Louis-Dreyfus here. It's been 3-4 months ago during this election cycle. And it was pretty funny because she's like, we've done all this crazy stuff and it's now like we're doing a documentary. It's not a comedy show that, I don't know how we have to step up our game enough to be over the top like we are, considering everything that's happened in this election cycle. It was a really good interview.
Yeah, I read the same article saying that this election has ruined their ability to really make fun of things, because how do you make it more of a zoo than what this election cycle has been? So it'll be interesting to see what they do in season six. But yeah, that show is just so phenomenally good. Sometimes you'll see things that get paired together, shows that get paired together, and they complement each other perfectly. I think when HBO is doing Silicon Valley and then followed by Veep, I know people don't watch shows live anymore, but I even, when I'm watching those shows on HBO now, I'll usually do them back to back just because I think they pair really well. Like, with Silicon Valley, I feel like working in this industry that I can really identify with it. And because I really am not a big fan of politics in general, seeing something like Veep really just makes it a really entertaining hour of television.
That's what I was thinking. This is the rabbit hole. That's what the name of this episode should be.
It's been really OT.
We got to call this the off-topic show, man. We have really gone down into the weeds, but it's been a slow news week. I still can't order my AirPods. But hey, at least by next week's episode, we should be able to talk about the new Macs that will be out. So that'll be fun.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah, I have an interesting story about that. Grace called me this week from school and she says, my trackpad doesn't work. And I said, well, I'll get you a mouse and I'll bring it over to your dorm room. So then she says, I get over there and I notice that the middle of her palm rest, or where the trackpad is flexed in the middle. And I'm like, ooh, your battery is bulging. And the edges of the trackpad weren't even flush with the edges of where it should be on the palm rest. So anyway, I've got this 3-year-old MacBook Pro that I think I'm going to give to her. I went ahead and bought her a new battery and, took care of that just so in case it doesn't burn her dorm down. And
did it have a Note 7 stuck in as the power source?
Not.
I had a MacBook battery, MacBook Pro battery, do the same thing, Brad. It popped up and popped up my my trackpad on an older, I'm talking probably 5-6-year-old at least MacBook Pro that I had that wasn't even being used. And when I pulled it out, for some reason, the battery had ballooned up and was pressed right up on the trackpad, exactly like that.
Yes, she has a 2010 white MacBook. So she's really due. I mean, she had it all the way through high school and now 2 years of college, and she's pretty rough on it. So she's due. So what I was going to do is give her my 3-year-old MacBook Pro, and then next week
score
get myself a new MacBook. That's a perfect opportunity.
Funny how that all lined up.
Yeah, that is funny, isn't it?
Let's see. Was there anything else? No new AirPod yet. No new MacBook Pros, though that's coming.
I had a little follow-up from last week. I just wanted to real quick say I apologize for screwing up the name of the Carousel of Progress instead of, I think I said this Carousel of Tomorrow, because I started singing this song from the Disney ride. So it is the Carousel of Progress. And that scene where the guy is talking to the oven is not from the original 1964 World's Fair version of the Carousel of Progress, but the Disney did a remodel. I think it was in the late 70s or early 80s is where that scene came from. But still, I mean, we're talking, you know, the 80s where they were doing something where they were talking to appliances. And just now are we finally getting there, you know, 30, 35 years later. So I thought that was kind of interesting and just wanted to apologize for my...
It's a small Mr. Toad progressing...
You should pop into the show notes for last week's episode, Jim, and look at the link that I put in there. So somebody had filmed the entire thing, and that's when I knew you got it wrong, but I didn't say anything to you. But you should look at that link, because I think that's in there. It's like 20 or 30 minutes long. Like the whole performance is in there. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah, this person I know reminded me that I screwed it up pretty quickly when she listened. So,
and also follow up from last week throughout the airport. So I had said that I'd heard a rumor that they were saying turn off all your Samsung phones. Turns out that wasn't the case. They did keep it limited to the Note 7. When I was in San Diego's airport yesterday, there was a huge sign with a Samsung Note 7 with a circle with a line through it. I should have gotten a picture, but I was really in a hurry to get through security. But yeah, it's on all my flights. I think we had one guy on the way out to San Diego from Atlanta who did have a Note 7. But yesterday on the way back, they had said, you know, you can't have these on the flight. But then they followed it up with, if you do have one on the flight, please make sure that it's powered off and do not turn it on and do not charge it. And I'm thinking, FAA says you can't even have it on the plane. So shame on you, Delta.
If I die, my wife is suing you.
Exactly. And Samsung. Go after those deep pockets. Well, folks, I think that's all we've covered everything we meant to hit this week. So do you guys have anything else?
Slow news week. I think next week we'll pick up with the new MacBooks. We'll see. We decide to order one. I'm in the market. I think I'm going to order one, but I'm not positive. So looking forward to that. It's always nice. Apple keynote week of any sort. I'm looking forward to that on the 27th, right?
Yep, it's the 27th. And I hope during the same announcement, they will go ahead and say, and by the way, when you order your new MacBook, get some AirPods to go with it so I can go ahead and click order and stop obsessing over this.
They'll be in the store as we wind this up.
Brian will be peeling out, heading toward the nearest Apple store.
No, I'm going to be hitting order from the nearest Apple store app.
Setting his alarm for 3 a.m.
Always. All right. Well, that does it for us this week, fellas. Say goodbye, fellas.
Goodbye, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. We can be found on Twitter. I'm at Brian B. That's B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's B-I-G-J-I-M. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.